one lightning goes in the phone, right?
Two lightnings enter.
Two female lightnings on the other end. We got them yet?
Yes. Apparently. BMW Lightning USB Y cable, Plantronics Y adapter, high 2-in-1 male to 2 female. Looks like there's some.
We're gonna need more. Listen, man, all I did was kind of
Jesus.
Get a little sassy about all the like, oh yeah, the use case of the people who want to listen while they charge. And by and large, the phone or the battery on the 7 Plus has been really good, and I've found myself less in situations where I needed to charge stuff. But it is just, you realize how much of your life had been built around those sweet little moments where you could charge your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
yeah, Belkin's got a $40 adapter.
$40. I mean, come on. Hey guys, we're going to need to drive these prices down.
Part of it is just a very complicated.
Not available till October 10th either. Sorry, Roger.
Better everybody here better calm down with this $40 nonsense. We're going to settle this. Get China on the phone. China, get on this.
Hello, this is China.
Yeah, we had a problem, China. We need you to get on this and get us cheaper lightning splitter.
Do you want them to be fire safe or just fireproof?
Right now, man, I'm rolling the dice. You know, I'll take a little. I'll take.
We have a lot of capacity available at a Samsung SDI plant. We could take advantage of.
Listen, can't start a fire without a spark. His guns for hire. That's why we've been dancing on the day. Did you watch that, Mr. Robot? All right, we shouldn't spoil it.
I did. Yeah.
So here's,
I was really positive about this season, and after the finale, I'm slightly less positive about this season.
Well, here's what I told Brian leading into the episode. I love the season. And I even kind of really loved the first part of that finale. But I was like, and Brian was like, yeah, oh my God, like what a great season. I'm like, well, what we know is that this season has done all these amazing flips and twists, right?
Like a gymnast.
Exact analogy, right? Now, the question is, can it stick the landing or will it fall on its face? And I don't know that it fell on its face.
I don't feel like it fell.
The problem was, is that, and it even gave enough answers. The problem is that
it did one of those one step back and then brought it back.
Well, the problem is that it also gave us 19,000 other questions.
Which is fine. I'm not sure they were the questions I really care about.
I also don't think that it's fine. Because this is not a show that has a problem throwing questions on our plate, right?
Like, you think it's too many questions? You're like, hold on. I haven't finished eating the questions that I already had. I'm not ready for more questions, sir.
Listen, man, I'm sure that there's somebody who's mapped out every single scene. And part of what I've loved about the show is that it gives you these scenes that you might not think are all that important. But they do seem a little off for some reason. And then, you know, they turn out to be these other bigger things. One little illusion, because this is definitely a show that has not shied away from kind of like dead on allusions and references to other properties.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to do this in a spoiler-friendly.
Yeah, spoiler.
I'll need control, Tom.
Oh, sorry.
The room that our main character spends the majority of the episode in, very evocative of the room in The Wire, where, oh my, I'm going Inception level spoilers here. A pivotal scene in The Wire where a main character meets his end.
Yeah. No, you're right. That could just be like, well, all abandoned places look similar.
Yeah, until there's three people in a room and a gun's out.
I'm just saying, you're not wrong.
Because I was like, man, that looks like that. And then I'm like, I wonder if they're like trying to go after that. And then three people are in the room.
Yeah. That could be a homage.
I think it is.
Yeah. Easily.
I only think that because they've done plenty of those things where it's either through music cues or visual stuff or like stunt casting. They've tried to like,
yeah,
they haven't steered away from, no, this is that thing. Hold on.
There's the whole Back to the Future references in the last episode with all the music. All right, we ready to go here with this here episode? Mister? Oh, I wasn't looking at the video. I didn't realize you had actually walked away.
I am good. I'm going dark. Oh.
All right, here we go. Daily Tech News Show is powered by its audience, not outside organizations. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Thursday, September 21st, 2016. I'm Tom Merritt, Justin Robert Young, alongside for a Thursday of politics. Well, we're not going to talk about politics, but we're going to talk about predicting the results of elections.
Yeah, you know, focus data is something that obviously over the past, 75 to 30 years has become a more and more interesting part of politics, from buying magazine subscriptions and direct mail all through, Facebook campaigns. But we're going to see whether or not the one thing that has yet to really be proven, where polling has found a match in Twitter likes.
Yeah. And there's more rigor to this than you may imagine. If you've been sucked in by Upworthy headlines about using Twitter to predict this and that in the past, we understand your skepticism. But there's more to this than some of those studies in the past. There also may be less to it. We'll talk about that as well. But it's certainly an advance down that road. And if you are the kind of person who breaks out in hives when you're worried that someone's just going to start talking about politics you don't want to hear about, whether it's politics you don't agree with or you're just tired of it all, we're not going to get into the issues.
No.
We promise to be free of the issues in this discussion.
Don't worry. Normally people will say, don't worry, we won't cover the coverage. We are going to be only covering the coverage.
Exactly. We're safely only going to be covering not even all of the coverage, just polls. So
just polls.
Yeah.
Polling in general.
Nutonomy self-driving cars. We've talked about them. They're on the ground in Singapore, and you can now hail them using the ride-hailing service Grab. And don't forget, they only travel within that 1.5 square mile area called North One in Singapore. But it's Singapore versus Pittsburgh out there in the battle of hailing self-driving cars.
Ah, pirate versus merlion. Who will emerge?
Here are some more top stories. This one's no fun. Yahoo reported Thursday that data on 500 million user accounts was accessed without authorization in 2014. Now, you'll see it called stolen. I know it's easy to call it stolen. I don't like to call it stolen because it's data. You can't steal data. You can only copy it. You can access it and copy it. That's what happened. Anyway, Yahoo believes it was a state-sponsored actor. Yahoo says the data accessed may have included names, email addresses, telephone numbers, dates of birth, and hashed passwords, but may not have included unprotected passwords or payment card data or bank account information. Yahoo began sending affected users an email starting at 11:30 a.m. Pacific this morning. It will also ask those who haven't updated passwords since 2014 to do so. And it's telling people, look, you might want to improve the security. We have this new system where you don't even have to use a password to securely log in. We're going to reset some security questions for people. And if you're just worried about it at all, you might want to change your password anyway, even if we don't contact you. The big thing, obviously, in any hack like this is there's going to be a ton of phishing attempts to try to trick people into giving away their Yahoo account information by pretending to be Yahoo. So make sure to go to yahoo.com and find the information if you're looking for it. Don't just respond to any particular email in your email account.
All right. Tom, let's play a great game called How Newsworthy Is It? Yahoo, 5 million users breach. Pretty newsworthy because of the number.
500 million users.
500 million, sorry. 500 million.
Yeah. No, I know. It's a big number. It's hard to... Well, it can't be 500. That's just ridiculous. No, it's 500.
No.
Yeah.
500 million with an M. But here, more so for me, is the newsworthy element. 2014. For those of you who do not have a calendar, currently 2016. What has happened between then and now? Well, Yahoo has gone through a lot of turmoil, much of it focused on selling to another company. This begins to get into, for me, what did you know and when did you know it territory for the Yahoo leadership. Now, I don't think that this is necessarily going to be the main through line, but it does raise suspicions. It bears asking questions why this is just now coming to light, right?
No.
It does not.
It doesn't, in my opinion.
Why not?
Here's why. We've seen a lot of these hacks come out recently. LinkedIn had one from 2012, which is farther back. A lot of times, attackers are able to infiltrate an organization, access a database, and be gone without being detected. Yes, that is a failure in your security, but it is not a particular failure of Yahoo. We've seen this happen over and over and over and over. That is something that happens where you don't discover it until later. The other thing that's being thrown around is, yeah, but Recode announced this earlier, and there was a guy selling the database earlier this year. Why didn't they tell us then? Well, first of all, Recode posted yesterday that their sources said Yahoo was about to make an announcement. Yahoo doesn't make the announcement until they're sure about the breach. Today, they were sure about the breach, so they make the announcement. The guy selling the database in 2012 could be selling a bunk database, so Yahoo has to investigate and make sure that's a real breach and what the nature of it is. Also, you may not be talking about the same breach. Jeremiah Grossman on Twitter just now said, look, state actors don't generally vend their databases through channels, so it is quite possible that these are two different breaches. The 2012 one could even be made up of other breaches where someone runs a script to validate those accounts against Yahoo because people reuse passwords. So Yahoo is announcing it now because they have just now gone through the process of discovering the breach, validating it, and being able to tell people what happened. If they announce it before they know what happened, they're under even more scrutiny and criticism for causing undue panic when they and not having answers for people.
Okay. And let's understand that we are not trying to cast aspersions on Yahoo, right? But I do think that it bears asking the questions, and they have the burden of proof on them to say, yeah, no, we found out about this at this point, and these are the steps we went through. This is the timeline for it. They need to establish the timeline, because although everything you said is absolutely reasonable, it is also, I mean, and now the sale to Yahoo, which is still in the machinations of happening to Verizon, is these gears turn slowly. Right. And
I mean, sure. At this point, it's in Yahoo's best interest to lay all that out because so many people are hurling accusations against them. So that's the nature of today. However, if I'm Yahoo and I want to cover this up, I wait until the Verizon deal is closed. I don't do it right in the middle of the approval process. This is the worst. This is the worst possible time to reveal a breach if you're going to try to time it. You either want to do it early on or you want to do it after. You don't want to do it in the middle of regulatory approval. It's awful.
That's the point. Because, yeah, sure, Nixon would have bragged about Watergate after he finished his second.
You're saying they didn't have a choice, but I don't know that that's true.
Sure. And I guess here's my brain says this. I'm not saying they did anything wrong. And as you laid out, there are plenty of very, very, very plausible, understandable reasons why this comes out exactly now, right? But because of the circumstances that surround them, they do need to ask, they do need to answer these timeline questions. Like, I don't think that, like, yes, the accusations are coming at them, but I don't know if they're baseless. I don't think that this is just Silicon Valley hubbub. Let's pin the shame tail on Yahoo.
Oh, I really do think it's that. I really do. I think,
I mean, it can be both.
I think there is a certain amount of validity in what you say regarding the fact that they are in the middle of a transaction, and for shareholder due diligence, they, if nothing else, they need to lay out all of these facts, because Verizon's going to want to adjust that share price based on this. This is damaging to the brand, and that's all of that is fair. All of that is fair. A lot of these accusations, like why Yahoo didn't tell us earlier, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, are really motivated by people just wanting to sling mud at Yahoo and Marissa Meyer in particular.
I don't know. I mean, yes, listen, but making fun of Yahoo,
a national pastime.
Yeah, exactly. It is the most wonderful time of the year, right? You know, the leaves are changing. We're making fun of Yahoo. It's a pumpkin spice latte festival for everybody. But I don't think that these are unreasonable questions to ask.
Yeah, I can't disagree with you there, because there are reasonable points to make, right? There are reasonable reasons to ask them. I don't believe that's why most people are asking them, though.
Well, now you're getting into, you know, motivation.
Yeah. Right? No, absolutely. It's true. But I will concede that the fact that you are in the middle of an acquisition means, yes, you have to put as much information out to the shareholders involved, to Verizon. And because that requires revelations, you know, under certain regulations, those are going to have to be public. And that's going to happen no matter what. So it almost doesn't matter. But I don't think that you can, I don't think it's fair to jump to a conclusion that Yahoo is acting nefariously here when they're acting almost exactly like every other company that's had a breach. And in fact, their breach is more recent. In 2014, it's only 2 years old versus numerous breaches over the past year that have been from 2012.
Yeah. And again, there are very good reasons. There is a very reasonable timeline, but it's up to them to lay it out, because the larger newsworthy question out there, should they not, is did Yahoo put their potential sale, did they prioritize that over the safety and security of their users?
Fair enough.
That's the question. Elon Musk, meanwhile, tweeted Thursday about
a guy who never courts any controversy himself.
Oh, sweet Lord, no. When he's not, you know, at 1 a.m. tweeting, you know, clips from the Lego movie to talk about his space company. Elon Musk tweeted Thursday about an October 29th announcement in the San Francisco area for a new Tesla Solar City solar roof with integrated power wall, 2.0 battery, and Tesla charger. This sounds like the realization of the details of Musk's master plan, part two. For those of you who are just new to this, this is literally what he called his master plan, part two, like Hot Shots, for Tesla, released in July. Solar City and Tesla plan to merge, but the deal has not yet been closed. October 29th, a spooky announcement for Elon Musk. What do you think, Tom?
This one's really interesting because what we're looking at is somebody also in the middle of a possible acquisition, but this one is actually way more controversial than Yahoo and Verizon, because it's Elon Musk asking Elon Musk if he could sell his company to himself and a bunch of other shareholders along. Now, if you haven't been following this, Musk recused himself from the situation. So he has left it up to the non-combined shareholders in SolarCity and Tesla. But I think this plan is certainly one that he would do either way. If SolarCity does not merge with Tesla, he still intends to do this kind of cooperation with the two companies. But it certainly helps to nudge the shareholders along to, like, hey, look what these two companies can do together. It's a perfect marriage. SolarCity puts the solar panels on the roof. Tesla makes the power wall battery that goes inside your house, and it charges your Tesla car from literally top to bottom. We've got the whole thing solved.
Yeah, I think that's why you know, this just kind of makes sense. The big curiosity is, and this is really where Elon Musk is with all of his companies, now the combined Tesla, Solar City, and SpaceX, is we're past the exciting announcement phase for him. We are now in the rubber meets the road, literally, with Tesla in terms of seeing, can they meet demand? You know, sure, there's a lot of money that's coming in for the newest, more affordable model of the Tesla vehicle. How do those roll out? How do they fare when they are out there on this larger scale? You know, same thing with space with SpaceX. Now that these rockets are coming along at a steady clip, are there questions about, are they moving too fast? Are they not using the right parts? Are the oversight, is that where that needs to be? And to be fair, I am a Musk fanboy on a lot of this stuff. But with SpaceX, considering the rocket that blew up on the pad and the one that did so in the air a few months ago, there are some legitimate questions. So what this is I think, a lower stakes kind of thing, because, again, we know that SolarCity can do solar panels. We know that Tesla's building rad batteries. This seems like just the combo pack that was waiting to happen.
And it's definitely, definitely meant to nudge shareholders along towards a merger without violating any of the provisions that prevent you from doing things to nudge shareholders along for a merger. Because you can do it either way. It's not promising something if people vote one way or another.
I'm sure Elon thought it was a great idea while in his yurt at Burning Man.
Online dating site Tinder announced a new app for Apple's iMessage app store called Tinder Stacks. The app lets users create simple polls with images stacked on top of each other. It doesn't have anything to do with dating, but you still do the swipe right or swipe left to indicate your opinion of each image. So an example they gave was, you've got several outfits you're considering before you head out for the night. You take pictures, you put them in the poll with your friends, and your friends swipe right or left, and you see the results. Users have to have the Tinder app or install the Tinder app to take advantage of the Tinder Stacks. But if you already have Tinder on your phone, you can then just turn it on in iMessage, and you'll get Tinder Stacks in your iMessage apps.
So I did not read this carefully enough. Can you list other people's pictures there?
You can put whatever pictures you want in there. So I guess if you can get other people's images, you can put them in there. I think you're pulling it off your photo roll, though.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And this is just, you know, Tinder's way of doing it. I got a theory on this because I think this is okay. It's interesting a little bit, but I don't know if it's the greatest thing in the world. Also, I think it's safe to say that both Tom and I are kind of outside the traditional Tinder demo in terms of our personal lives. So I have not spent a lot of time in the app. However, here's something I'm very bullish on, is the iMessage app store. I think that this might be the, you know, Apple's long sucked at web services, and they've long sucked famously. Their loudest failures have been in social networks. And yet they have this element of the core iOS for which is very popular with some people. I have friends that delete their Facebooks because they don't care about it. Every once in a while, when the heat gets too hot in the kitchen, they'll delete it and restart it. They don't care about it that much. It's a digital footprint that sometimes they want there, sometimes they don't. And yet thousands of texts a day in an iMessage group chat, and they use every element of the iMessage group chat. And I don't think that in a world where WeChat and Line and Facebook Messenger have attracted the kind of attention that they've gotten, that it's insignificant that Apple has the kind of foothold that they have in their native messaging app. And the fact that they've made it richer is very interesting. Also, the fact that they have the relationships with developers that they do for the App Store in general, that now this is a brand that has proven to make money for people to spend time developing in there. I think we're going to see some really interesting stuff out of the App Store, the message App Store going forward.
That, you know what? Let's try this out. Send me your Tinder stack pull, and I'll look at it on my Nexus 5X. Oh, wait.
Well, that's the interesting
part. And that's because I don't disagree with anything you just said within that Apple universe. Apple's getting better at this sort of thing, and the iMessage thing is great if it's a bunch of people on iPhones. I will not deny that. But even in macOS Sierra on the desktop, it starts to fall apart a little. At least now you can see the stickers, but you can't respond with the stickers. As soon as you're outside the Apple universe, it's worthless. And I think that's the gating factor to this kind of thing, and actually works against Apple because the majority of people are not on iOS and therefore dismiss this and even have a little bit of resentment against it because it's something that only their friends who can afford iPhones are on.
Sure, but they resented and dismissed Instagram until it came to Android.
Yeah,
right.
And if iMessage comes to Android, it could change that. Is that going to happen?
When we ask about like the philosophical Apple's philosophical opinion about whether or not they want to expand to these other platforms, it's all about money and acquisition, right? What Apple program did they make sure that they debuted on Android in the same time that they did the iPhone? Music, because it mattered to them how many people subscribed to Apple Music, right?
Although it was not really simultaneous. And
okay, close. I mean, for Apple.
It was not an elegant rollout on Android.
Then they made the decision to do it.
Sure.
Right? Which for Apple had been anathema to how they had thought previous, right? Is that they had not wanted to expand beyond iOS.
Yeah.
For anything. Which is why we have this mental block. All this is to say that if they find that their app store generates them a significant amount of money and they can say, hey, look, we can roll out an Android application. Now, all of a sudden, this pool is so much larger. That would be the reason, in my mind, that they would look to go beyond iOS. So if the question is, does a robust app store now bring us closer or further away from messages breaking out beyond iOS? I think it brings us closer.
Yeah, I would say that we're so far away that that amount of closeness doesn't matter. It just does. I don't see Apple caring that much. They can make plenty of money and never have to expand to Android.
Yeah, but I guess I would not have thought like this if it weren't for the fact that they did music, that they did understand that.
I wonder how much of that was Beats saying, hey guys, we've been living outside of your campus and we really can't succeed if we leave out the dominant platform out there. I feel like that's part of this. So that's an interesting pressure that is bearing from inside. And maybe that's what will end up making you right, is that will start to infect other teams.
Well, because, I mean, listen, they got the metrics. They know how many people, sign in through Apple devices and how many people sign in through Android devices. I'd be curious to see what that breakdown is.
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's talk about something less controversial. Cuba announced that it plans to install Wi-Fi on the 8-kilometer-long Malecon Seafront. It would become the largest hotspot on the island. The government has installed dozens of hotspots in the past year, charging $2 an hour. The average state salary in Cuba, for those wondering, is approximately $25 a month.
Yeah, I mean, you can go a lot of ways with this story. You can point out that this is not going to benefit the majority of people. This is a play for the tourists that come to that area. It's a touristy area. And as Cuba is starting to warm its relationships with the United States, it wants to take more money from people from the United States that might come visiting. And that's all true. It also is true that the government has been rolling out more hotspots in other areas that aren't as touristy. And there is a very small number of people who can't afford it, who like it. So you could say this is the thin edge of a wedge that maybe eventually brings more access to everyone. Cuba's somewhere between Russia and China in what they allow on the internet. I'm not sure. I'm 100% clear. I'm not sure how clear people are on it. You can get Facebook, you can get Twitter there. It's not like China where they've blocked those sites. On the other hand, the government does block at the telecom level certain opposition party sites and things like that.
My recommendation to all Cuban visitors, use a VPN.
Reports abound that Lenovo is blocking Linux. The story is about a day old, but it's still kicking around out there. So I wanted to take the opportunity to try to at least get some of the facts out there, because Lenovo is not blocking Linux. Here's what happened. A supposed Lenovo product expert, at least that's what their username said, was at the root of the confusion when a user named Baron HK left a review online complaining about the inability to install Linux on a Lenovo Yoga. He's not the only one. This has been replicated. People are saying, I can't install it. The so-called expert wrote, This system has a signature edition of Windows 10 Home installed. It is locked per our agreement with Microsoft. And of course, that made everybody say, look, a Lenovo person is saying Microsoft and Lenovo have colluded to stop Linux from being installed on a machine. Lenovo has since told Tech Republic it does not block operating systems on its devices. Here's what's actually happening. A vendor can choose, as Lenovo did, to set up RAID mode on solid-state drives under Windows 10 Signature Edition. Intel has not submitted patches to Linux to support this RAID mode at the processor level, and Lenovo's installation doesn't allow you as a user to change from RAID back to standard mode. So Matthew Garrett wrote a good post on this. He suspects this might be to force Intel's power management. The reason Lenovo wouldn't let you switch is to force Intel's power management to be used instead of Microsoft's power management, because Microsoft's power management doesn't yet support the power management needed for recent Intel hardware. So we have a cascade of people not quite yet supporting a new thing that's causing it. It's up to you. You can blame Lenovo for choosing not to allow non-RAID mode. You can blame Intel for not issuing patches for that RAID mode. Or you can blame Microsoft for not supporting Intel's new power management. Or blame all three of them. There's plenty of blame to go around.
But this is not a shadowy E-Core conspiracy to keep Linux off the Lenovo.
No, and as Microsoft warms more and more towards Linux, it wouldn't make sense for Microsoft to be blocking it from being installed. It wouldn't make sense for Lenovo to block it from being installed. It is a bad situation, though, where people are not properly issuing their patches and getting things up to speed. So there is a problem here. It's just not the one people thought.
Yeah. Recode reports that its sources say Verizon is in advanced talks to acquire video startup Vessel. Vessel is run by former Hulu CEO Jason Kilar. Vessel has been allegedly working on a new product described as, wait for it, Snapchat-like, with image filters and other features. Recode's Peter Kafka points out that Verizon has listed video among the main reasons for acquiring AOL and allegedly Yahoo, depending on
and possibly yeah. So my wife, who works at YouTube, obviously keeps up on Vessel news, and she saw this break and pointed it out to me, and at first I was like, oh well, that makes sense. Verizon has video aspirations with their Go 90 based on the Intel OnQ technology that they bought. That doesn't seem to be catching on, so they're probably looking for a new route to go. They've got all this video from Yahoo, all this video from AOL. Why not buy Vessel and use that technology expertise and use that infrastructure? But as soon as she pointed to the part about they're working on a Snapchat-like product, my whole understanding of this just fell apart. Like, I have no idea why Verizon would be interested in that. I don't have no idea why Vessel would suddenly think they could compete with Snapchat, although people have pivoted in weirder ways, so maybe it could. What do you think of this?
Well, let's understand what Vessel is. For people not familiar with it, Vessel's key value proposition to consumers was, do you like YouTube channels? Well, guess what? All your favorite YouTube people are now on this service called Vessel. You can pay a very reasonable monthly fee to subscribe to them, and you can get their videos early. Now, this was thought to be initially a bit of a interesting play because artificial time constraints on internet videos had traditionally not held up. But Jason Kilar is a very smart guy. He had just come out of Hulu, which had been a big success where it could have been a big failure. He learned how to work with all these major networks. Why can't he work with these smiling, fresh-faced teens who make up YouTube? And now it seems like, well, either they're going to sell or they're pivoting to something else. My question is, what is Vessel if they don't have the talent? You know, if the point of Verizon
apparently
acquiring
Snapchat.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, so now we're just onto the drawing board. If the point of Verizon acquiring Vessel is that now they're going to really make that money worth it for some of their big talent on YouTube, and they're going to start offering like big boy cash
here's the point that makes sense. Vessel built this infrastructure, this streaming product, and all this technology. They couldn't get the talent. Yahoo's sitting there on talent. AOL's sitting there on talent. It's match made in heaven if you look at it that way.
That they start to plug that into exclusivity.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you don't even necessarily have to have the paywall. That's just a feature that the vessel tried to use to distinguish themselves. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. That is less important to me than, hey, we've got this great streaming technology and this interface that has been tested. Let's start funneling back episodes of Community and Katie Couric specials and TechCrunch video and HuffPo video. And suddenly you've got a much more compelling offering there. And maybe there's a pay aspect to that.
Then what's this Snapchat thing?
I have no idea. That's what I said. That's where I'm like, wait, okay, now I have no idea what they're doing. Maybe that's Vessel's plan forward if they don't get acquired. And if Verizon acquires them, that goes away.
Yeah. Although that just might be the last sentence of every press release, right? You know, Mrs. Fields is offering a new cookie, and now they're also creating Snapchat.
They're also possibly pivoting towards Snapchat. Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's all it is. Thanks to all those who participate in our subreddit. You can submit stories and vote on them at dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. That's a look at the top stories. Let's talk about Professor Nick Beauchamp. He is assistant professor of political science at Northeastern University. He has a paper being published in the American Journal of Political Science describing how he used a machine learning algorithm on 100 million tweets to estimate political candidate polls. Now, that's not the part that's exciting. What's exciting is he was able to match state-level polls. And Justin, maybe you can explain this better than I. State-level polls are few and far between because they're costlier, but they also are often more accurate. Is that right?
Well, yes and no. So when you are watching political coverage, you are essentially seeing two things, and we'll broadly define them as national tracking polls, right? And then what we understand or hear about in news media as battleground polls. These are state polls that are in states that are in play, but they are, we kind of colloquially call them battleground polls because those are the only states that do these on a frequent enough basis for us to keep any kind of rolling, like, oh, okay, before Hillary Clinton said basket of deplorables, she was blank in Pennsylvania. Now she is Y. Or before Donald Trump said this about, you know, Judge Curiel, he was this in Nevada, which has a heavy Mexican population, and now he is Y. Because those are battleground polls where they're doing them fairly frequently. What tracking polls, national tracking polls do is, although we do not decide the president based on a nationwide popular vote, they do kind of give you that basic balance of, okay, well, maybe in these states, this is generally where people are leaning. So when you look at data like this, what you are really saying is we might have more of a live pulse on these states because all polls in general, daily tracking, states, whatever, are all very expensive to do. They each poll that you see costs a fair amount of money. If there is a cheaper way to do it, and now we start to look at polling as, well, who can build the better scraper algorithm based on, you know, whatever Twitter data, then you might have an interesting addition to the rich mosaic that we now look at as political data.
So what Professor Beauchamp was able to find was that Twitter-based measures that he created tracked and to some degree predicted opinion polls and could be extended to unpolled states and potentially sub-state regions and sub-day timescales. And they can also deduce topics and events that are associated with opinion shifts. So like Justin was saying, when a candidate says, you know, something controversial, you can see what effect it has by looking at this data. Now, it's easy to start to pick apart this when you don't know how it's done, to say like, well, Twitter isn't representative of the populace, which it isn't. No. And how do you tell when somebody's saying positive versus negative? And that's why he has a peer-reviewed paper that goes into detail about this. The way oversimplified defense is he said previous studies have not set the bar high enough. He found four things that he made sure that he did and that he hopes people who attempt to validate his results and replicate them in the future do, which is statistical testing that is valid, high sample size, reduction of bias, all the statistical methods you have to do to have a high confidence, clear benchmarks So he's comparing his results to actual election or poll results, yep. not just saying like, hey, it looks like this is what people think. I guess that's pretty interesting. Training of the machine learning must be applied. And so that needs a lot of variables, a lot of data, polls, earlier election results, et cetera. And then something that was a little difficult for me to wrap my head around, validation out of sample. Now, this is getting really into the statistical part of this. I actually called Dave Broadback. He's the Dave, the psychologist who writes into the show, to make sure I had this right. Validation out of sample means you remove some data from your sample at random, and yeah. then you look at, then you make your model based on the sample that's left over. And then you look to see if the sample that you removed, the data that you removed, still fits the model. If it yeah. didn't, you got a problem with your model. He not only, Professor Beauchamp not only says you need to do validation out of sample, but he says preferably forward in time. So what you do there is you've got this Twitter timeline of stuff. You take it out, take out 1 month from the end of the sample, create your model, see what it says, then see if you put that forward in time sample back in, whether the model still works. And he said this, it did in this one.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we are going to see as people start to pour through this, whether or not it is, you know, it stands up to scrutiny. I don't think there's anything that I saw that necessarily showed a gigantic red flag. But let's also understand where this is helpful and where it's not. It is certainly a step forward if it is able to predict state polling for, you know, battleground states, you know, to see, and especially like that live finger on the pulse is very interesting, you know, and you can see, well, it was exactly at 5 o'clock on September 11th on, you know, 2 weeks ago when Hillary Clinton was found falling down on the way to her car that people started to feel shaky about her, right? Or you could say exactly at the point that, you know, the Donald Trump made his statement about the birther thing, that became an issue again, that first broke on CNN at this time. You can track it on Google Trends. You can put that graph on top of this graph and you can understand a lot of snap judgments. Here's what you can't do. It does not have that full form robustness that an actual call poll does. So you are not just asking, who are you voting for, and then hanging up. You are saying, who's the strongest leader? If this person did this thing, how would you react? How would you rank the various people? Can we ask you, are you for, is Gary Johnson on your radar? Is Jill Stein on your radar? And that's where you get a lot of the rich political science data of, and also the demographic of, well, you know, Donald Trump needs to win blue collar voters in Ohio, North Carolina, Michigan, right? Hillary Clinton needs to win young African-American women in the following cities. And these are the issues that they specifically care about. So you're going to see messages targeted specifically to them. You will not necessarily get that here, but there's certainly something to be said for having that lightning fast understanding of, well, this is where things go up and down.
Yeah. And the main intent in the paper was to see if you could model the actual polls. And Beauchamp says, I was able to do that. Now, yes, Justin's absolutely right. More people need to replicate this and say, yeah, I'm also able to do that using his model to validate it. But let's say that happens. Then you can start to say, okay, what else can we do with this algorithm? Can we start to deduce out these other things that a call poll can do? And what are the limits? What are the things that you can't figure out there? They were able in this particular study to bolster previous studies, which showed that left-leaning regions tend to cite external sources and discuss regional issues, while right-leaning regions show a higher degree of retweeting people's statements and discussing national issues. And that is the beginning. That's the glimmer of the kind of thing that Justin's talking about, which is like, okay, I'm in this region. I need to make sure to do a lot of citations because that's what people like to see versus, oh, I'm over here, so I want to retweet respected individuals because that's the kind of, you know, I want to quote respected individuals because that's the kind of thing that plays well here. It's a very blunt version of that, but it's the beginnings.
I would be cautious with stuff like that because that also makes a lot of assumptions in terms of how many outlets there are that people on either side of the aisle deem to be respectable or are thought to be respectable.
Yeah, it's not fine-tuned enough, right? It's right. Really blunt. Yeah.
Here's what is important is that what does not happen, because I made sure to use the term battleground polls, is with state polling, is you do not get a lot of state polling in states that are not in play. You do not poll New York a lot. You do not poll California a lot. You don't poll Texas a lot. You know that those are going to go for either the Republicans or the Democrats because they've always done it, and that's not going to be really in question. And for our Electoral College map, they're not going to be a surprise. However, there is tremendous data to be had there, and political scientists crave it because polling people crave it because what it does show is enthusiasm, that if you are polling soft in states that you are definitely going to win, it could be reflective of national enthusiasm softening, right? Or if it is certain demographics that you are doing poorly in states that you know you are going to win, that might be reflective of something going forward. So the idea of being able to not only have this idea in states that we do not poll a lot, to me, is more exciting than what we are seeing now in battleground polls, because I don't think that this supplants anything that we are doing now, nor is it making the case that it should.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
But I do think that in places where, a lot of people just don't want to, New York, the LA Times spends a lot of money doing a like every 3-day rolling tracking poll nationally and not one in California. Why? Because California is effectively useless and a national poll is something interesting that they can report. Right.
And
people don't want to spend money.
I look forward to the unasked question aspect if this were to be able to provide good results, which is you start to see things come out of the data. The machine intelligence starts to pull things out that we never thought to ask, that gives some insight into things. Maybe it's a third-party candidate influence. Maybe it's an issue that nobody else was talking about in the media, but actually is got a little bit of a groundswell of importance. That kind of unexpected stuff is the things I usually see in data when I look at hard data, when I look at traffic data for a website, when I look at raw survey responses. That's the kind of stuff that's fun because you're like, oh, I'm seeing something I would have never thought to ask about.
Yeah. It's very, 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 very interesting going forward. And, I think we've seen obviously a very interesting campaign season and one that has had its own share of kind of polling, some polling faux pas. You saw specifically in the Democratic primary, Michigan polling with Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders was historically off. It was projecting a Hillary Clinton win by 8 points and she lost by 10 points.
That's where more of these papers get really interesting, is if one of these models can say, well, this model had it right.
Exactly. So that's what I would have loved to see. And then I guess theoretically all this is frozen in the amber of a server somewhere in Twitter, right? That you could go back and say, well, hey, look, let's run this model against all that data.
Yeah, absolutely.
And see, whether or not the Twitter model was saying, nope, yeah, we definitely thought that this was going to be a much tighter, if not, different race.
So yeah, more work to be done, but this is the kind of work and headlines and reporting often just make it so you just don't want to listen to anything sometimes. But this is the kind of thing where it's like, it would be easy to overpromise, like Twitter can predict elections. That's not true. It would be easy to underpromise and say, yeah, you can make stats say anything. Also, not exactly true. This is good work that is the first step towards maybe being able to come up with some actual reliable information from this kind of data mining, which, shocker, can actually happen.
And there is not, I know we wind up getting, super nerdy and talking about various different things that we follow, for election prediction and stuff like that. But there are interesting online solutions to stuff like this.
Yeah, I actually did not go off on my favorite one, the Iowa Electronic Markets today, but go check that one out. I have a feeling it's going to be wrong this year. I don't know why I think that. The reason I think that is participation in it seems to be down. But the Iowa Electronic Markets, going back to 2000, has predicted the vote share and the winner of the U.S. presidential election within a percentage point every time, including 2000, when its market said, we think Al Gore will win the vote share, but we think George Bush will win the election. That was the most impressive one to me. We'll see if it keeps its track record this year. Let's get to our message of the day. David B. in Pleasant Cayucos says, here's my theory on all that Google advertising that's been happening lately. I'm predicting that when the Pixel phones are revealed in October, they will come with a new Pixel OS, Google's very own branch of Android. It will be made specifically for the new Pixel phones, will contain some software features exclusive to the line. Google will still continue to update and produce Android, but its market will specifically be non-Google-made hardware. By tying the OS to the hardware, like Apple, Google will be able to control the entire experience and ensure that each year, when the new version of Pixel OS comes out, it will roll out to the previous Pixel phones. I use both iOS and Android, and as much as I love Android, the upgrade process has gotten nuts. By creating their own ecosystem and controlling it completely, they may have a chance of competing with iOS for market share. Well, they actually pretty much, Android pretty much crushes it. But I think what he means is Google's own phone.
Google hardware with clean Google OS install. Yeah.
And he uses a Nexus. So he's experiencing the best version of operating system upgrades that you can get from Google right now. And he's still frustrated with it. So I think this is unlikely, but it's an intriguing thought. Because my mind immediately went to, do they then loosen the restrictions on Android to get around the antitrust accusations that they're facing in places like Russia and Europe?
So this is almost as much of a PR decision as it is a technical one.
Could be, yeah, right.
You would essentially be cutting loose the name Android from what you want to be associated with your hardware. Because previously, like you mentioned, with the Nexus phones, the pitch of the Nexus phones was, this is the one that we're going to pay attention to from a software perspective. This one gets a clean install. We're not going to do the crazy bloatware that you would normally get on all these other subsidized versions of the Android OS. And you know, to take that to the next level with the Pixel, where they're going to be creating their own hardware as well. You know, we'll see. You know, I don't know. I think for that to happen, and we might be there at this perfect storm, where Google would want to totally reclaim and reboot what it means to own a Google phone, right? And they would want, it seems like they are definitely heading in the position of, they want to be far more involved in their own hardware than they have ever been before. So we'll see.
And they wouldn't even have to fork the OS to do it. It could be similar to what Windows does, where you have the Windows that goes on HP, Lenovo, Dell, etc. You have the Windows 10 Signature Edition, which has to meet certain criteria with Microsoft to carry that name. And then you have the Surface, which is the one made by Microsoft. And certainly that's what Pixel is shaping up to be. Whether there's a version or branding of the operating system on that, that's an interesting thought. Thank you.
They would specifically be marketing it as better than Android, right? Pixel would be better than Android because it's not just, here's Android, the best version, the newest version of it. It's not Android.
Yeah, which makes me think they won't do that. But
they're very tied to that Android branding.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if although, you know, who knows? Listen, man, it's a new day dawning.
It is. And what do you have going on in that new day, Justin Robert Young, as we wrap up this show?
Well, you know, if you enjoyed some of that nerdy politics talk, then you can get much more of it at politicspoliticspolitics.com. That is my show about macrame. Just kidding. Politics. We do it 3 days a week now. We spun it up into a 3-day a week enterprise leading up to the election. So go ahead and check it out. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, we record live right here on diamondclub.tv at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time. And man, we have a pretty fun time.
Thanks to everybody who supports the show. DailyTechNewsShow.com/support. We'll let you know how to support the show if you're willing to do that. To those of you on Patreon, patreon.com/DTNS, I posted yesterday some proposed inclusions to the reward levels. So I'd like your feedback. If you haven't let me know already, go into patreon.com/DTNS and look for that posting yesterday and let me know what you think of the proposed new rewards. We haven't changed them in a little while, so it's about time that we give you some different stuff, some new stuff to make it more interesting and better. And I think it's just a better better way to take advantage of the work we do for the show and make it available in different forms. Things like newsletters, some monthly audio discussions, etc. Check that out, patreon.com/DTNS. Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. You can catch the show live Monday through Friday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern at alphageekradio.com and diamondclub.tv. And visit our website, dailytechnewsshow.com. Back tomorrow with Lamar Wilson and Len Peralta. Talk to you then.
Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
meaty show.
Man,
yeah.
It's like a steak in two.
Get your forks out, folks.
Come on. It's the weather's getting colder. A hearty DTNS for you.
That's right. The Ginty Moore of DTNSs.
That stuff gives me heartburn. It's like of all the packaged soups. Titles. PDTNS, Pole Dance Tech News Show.
Pole Dance. TV's gone.
But wait, there's more. Yahoo gets their breaches in a bunch.
That's pretty good.
You split your lightnings, you take your chances.
Well, that's with the pre-show, unfortunately. Yeah. But yeah.
Yahoo catches up with 2014.
Oh, you didn't like Cuba Libre Wi-Fi? I like that one.
Cuba Libre, I guess. Sure.
That's right.
I'm trying to look for what's something that applies to our stripping the poll data. What else is in here? Swipe this, swipe that.
Abandon all hope, Yahoo, enter here.
Take this hotspot to Cuba. A literal sunroof, pirate versus merlion. Oh, wait, that was pre-show, too.
No, wait. Well, that was in show, wasn't it? Yeah, because it was Singapore. It was when we were talking about the Newtonomy stuff.
Tinder was flipping with everything.
I tell you what, unless one of y'all has a favorite, I
don't know
which
not
one
have
I would go with.
Which one are you leaning towards?
Justin, do you have any thoughts?
I kind of like Cuba Libre.
Cuba Libre. Cuba Libre.
All
Cuba.
Right, I liked Yahoo gets their breeches in a bunch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I always get weird about the sentence long titles, but I definitely like that one.
It fits. My rule of thumb is if I can look at it in the WordPress title field without losing anything, I'll go with it. And this one fits.
I'm glad that we got onto that Yahoo thing because I didn't know that we were on opposite sides of it. I mean, we were really on opposite sides.
Well, no, yeah, enough but.
A recorded conversation.
No, but that was a good conversation though, because you represented a lot of very reasonable people, and some of them in the chat room before we started talking about that. That I just, you know, for whatever reason, maybe I'm just tired, but I'm just no.
The issue is your job. You are like the one thing I learned from being a movie critic for a year. Was it changed the way I looked at movies?
Sure. Yeah.
I found myself being frustrated with movies that didn't do things new.
Right. Cause you're seeing so many movies, right?
You saw so many of them and you found yourself over rewarding movies that might not be great, but definitely took that weird left turn where I was expecting for them to take a right turn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think similarly, your job is to watch the churn of tech news over and over and over again every single day. And one of the things that happens and has happened for the past 10 years is everybody line up, pull down your trousers and poop on Yahoo, right? For whatever Yahoo is doing. And if they're trying to do something.
It's a combination factor, right? It's like mixing your drugs with your alcohol, because there's also there was a hack, and so I'm going to overreact on how serious it was, no matter how serious it is.
Exactly. And that now let's just look at, oh my God, now it's mass hysteria. Nothing is safe, yada, 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 right? And by the way, that's now we can get into politics. That's another thing that only got more ridiculous when it got politicized with like the Russian hackers.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Around the Democratic National Convention, where it was like, all right, not only do we not know anything about hacking, but now let's make it. Here's one way that we can clear everything up. Let's make it politicized.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada.
Well, and there's another one, which is as soon as you say state actor, China or Russia. And mostly that's because they are perceived as enemies, or they are the IP addresses that every hacker uses, no matter where they're from in the world.
Yeah. Well, it came from Chicago. Says Jerry, Ace to Deck focuses on facts and numbers while you focus on feelings and passion. Now, although in generally, I think that I am probably more predisposed to follow the emotional and passionate narrative. I think in this particular case, the issue was more like I was thinking of it from the reporter perspective of like, well, Yahoo's got questions to answer. You know, and it doesn't mean that they're guilty. It just means that they got to answer. There is some what did you know and when did you know it? Because if they knew it a year ago, but they didn't want it to be a thing while they were negotiating this sale, which is clear motive, then now you are in a situation where Yahoo put their sale prioritized over their users. And that's something that users should know. They have a right to know.
Well, so, and I honestly think it's more shareholders than just users. I'm not leaving the users out, but in the factual side of this argument, and that's what I made clear in the show is Justin's asking for a very reasonable thing given this. I also think there is also an emotional element to it as well.
Well, and I think that's,
and I'm not even saying you were the representative.
No. There's an emotional element, which is poop on you, Yahoo. You know that Yahoo's sucks. It's old tech, and now we have, you know, a Soylent Fed future. Go ahead.
Speaking of Yahoo, title: Yahoo gets breaches in bunch or Cuba Libre, because they're both.
Oh, no, Yahoo gets their breaches in a bunch. Yeah, sorry, made that clear.
I need to take a phone call.
Okay, no worries, man. No Roger tomorrow, folks. Yeah. It'll be a Rogerless tomorrow.
I will help fill it out tomorrow morning.
Okay.
I'll have to be on the road.
Yeah. Roger's off looking for a place to live.
Yes. Help me find a cave at an affordable price. And by cave, it's just a colloquialism for home.
Yeah. Not an actual cave.
No. Unless it's actually decked out like they have in the opal mines out in Western Australia, where they have wall-to-wall carpet, electricity, and refrigerators and HDTVs.
Sounds good. I don't know if we have those here in the U.S.
I don't think so. Yeah. Too much dirt.
All right. No, go take your call.
All right.
Thanks, man.
See you guys.
Yep.
But yeah, going back to the general, like having two sides, like two real sides, like not just like, well, let me take the opposite side. Like having two real sides on that was good. I like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm glad. I thought it was a good episode, man.
Yeah, I thought so too.
I thought it was really good. Man, we're good. Let's celebrate.
I pulled a muscle. Pat myself on the back. Damn it.
By the way, I'm definitely coming in next week.
Oh, good. We should, I'm almost done exporting here. We should chat about that if you've got a few minutes.
Yeah, I'm in Tuesday morning. And, then I am back out Thursday, and I'm going to the Auntie Donna show on Wednesday night.
Oh, okay. What time do you get in on Tuesday?
Let's take a look.
Let's go to the polls.
Let's go.
Timpani.
Signing on into United. Hey, by the way, you know, listen, news you can use. The United Club now has charcuterie.
Really? Yes. You know, I used, because I have that United credit card, I used my pass in Tokyo at Narita. They did not have charcuterie there.
They did not, but they have the beer machine.
They do. What was funny was we were able, on our trip to Korea, we used points and got business class and were allowed into the ANA lounge or the United Lounge because it's All Star Alliance.
Yeah.
The ANA Lounge kind of put the United Lounge to shame.
Oh, yeah. No.
Because they had the beer machines, but they also had a noodle person.
Yeah, no. In general, not American Airlines, the airline, but airlines that emanate from America or are based in America do not take lounges as seriously as other carriers.
Because our friend flew back through Istanbul and was sending us pictures from the Turkish Airlines lounge there, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, no. In general, they don't. And I don't know whether or not, I think it's partly that in America, flying is such a commodity that it's just they don't, like, United's actually stepped up their clubs recently.
Well, they've got the first class lounges that are separate, right? Is that part of it?
No. Just in general, like, okay. You know, go walk in. I mean, in Narita, by the way, welcome to our new segment called Relatable Topics. But the Narita one, they've got another, like, city in the clouds that's their first class one that I did not get into. But in general, the United clubs have all kind of been stepped up a little bit in that they always used to have just like a continental breakfast, like muffins and stuff like that. And maybe like a little bit of fruit here and again, but not a big thing. Now they all got soups. They all got charcuterie. And some of them even are doing the very international thing of just leaving out a bunch of bottles of liquor and beer taps instead of having a bartender where you just go ahead and you live your life.
Right. Treat yourself. that was what it was in the United Lounge in Narita. I can't remember the lounge situation in Incheon though, so it must not have been that great.
I remember the poor lady at the LAX United Club was counting. She had to like measure out with a little ruler the height of all the liquor in all the bottles in the United Club.
They were that controlling of what goes on.
I was
there.
Like, that's a waste of time and money. Like that is the dumbest bean countery nonsense ever to be like worried about exactly how much you're pouring out for the people that are paying extra to sit in your lounge.
I mean, I don't really get into the lounges in the United States anymore because I fly Southwest. I'm trying to think if I've ever even been in that LAX lounge, but the Narita lounges, it was very clear that, the United Lounge was nicer than the ones that I have been in the United States by having like a little more food and maybe a little more space. But that ANA lounge, man, that was.
Yeah, if you're in SFO, you can go to the International Terminal United Club. There are three United Clubs at SFO. There's one in the new area of Terminal 3. There's one in the old area of Terminal 3. And then there's one in the International Terminal.
Hey, people, if you don't realize this, Justin used to travel for a living when he worked for the Go Games. Like, this is someone that was in the air, like, two or three times a week. So
I got that club credit card, it made my life infinitely better, like immediately to be able to go to these clubs. Anyway, the one in the International Terminal is also a de facto ANA lounge, right? And they have extra food, but they have an ANA representative who will stop you from getting the extra food if you don't have an ANA ticket.
You're kidding me.
I am not at all kidding. If you have a United Club membership and you go to the International Terminal, there is an ANA food guard in the lounge.
That has to be a United thing, where United said, okay, ANA, you need to have this food, but we're not going to pay for it. So ANA said, well, fine, then we're not going to let any United Club people eat it.
Who knows? Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. It's always seemed a bit silly to me. All right, so I am in on Tuesday at 7 o'clock. in the moment.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm doing the analyst's call, the hangout, at 8 a.m.
So I might have a chance to even just get to your place because you're not far from LAX,
I'm
right?
Like 15 minutes from LAX, yeah.
So I might be able to just roll into your house and we'll...
You want to join the analyst call?
I'll jump in on the analyst call and then...
Yeah. I think that... Yeah, if you want to do that, that'd be awesome.
Then we can bang out FSL, right?
Yeah, I have us doing it at 3 o'clock, but we could do it after the analyst call if you do that.
Yeah, unless there's any reason that I move it, but I don't think I will. Cause I also got to get in. I got to get into LA. I just can't be flying at 9:15 when I do TMS on Tuesdays.
Okay. So, right. So we could do analyst call till 9. You could do your TMS thing from 9:15 to 11.
Yeah.
How long does it take you to do your TMS?
Anywhere between 15 and 70 minutes.
Yeah. No, I think this. Yeah. Then we could just like 9:30-ish do FSL. Would that work?
Yeah.
All right.
TVC gone. Jury, do they have Samsung phones to dump champagne on? I don't think people are joking about the physical constitution of Samsung phones anymore.
Oh, well, you can still dump on the Galaxy S7.
I mean, you should. Champagne. You should always have a bottle of champagne with a Samsung phone, just in case.
Just in case you need to pour it out for the Note 7. Let's pour a little out for the Note 7. Or onto a Galaxy S7. All right. We are publishing the show right now. Thank you all for watching. Have a lovely day. And shoot some chrome into your mouth.